This is Waitley for Red Energy, born and bred in Melbourne. That's Red Energy, and the BMW end of financial year event is now on at Doncaster BMW. A lot of texts after Nathan Buckley has left, and I'll share those with you as the morning unfolds. 0433 98 11 16. Legend of the game, Malcolm Blight, is with me. Malcolm, good morning.
Good morning, Jared. How are you? This fine morning.
I'm very well. I see that with a bit of election flavour, you're lobbying for the torpedo again, just once a year. Keep it in the conversation. I love it, Malcolm.
If I could only get it in more often, perhaps people would start listening. Jared, I don't know if I've said it to you. I've said it for the last 20 years. I don't know why, and don't forget I've been at a club for 5 or 6 years of the last seven, so I just don't know why it's not practiced, because right now that could get across all this congestion at the end, and once you learn how to do it, it's not an easy kick, but it's not a difficult kick.
It's an interesting one, isn't it, Malcolm? Is if you framed it instead of why, you go, why not? Why wouldn't you have the torpedo in your armoury?
I must admit, I did coach this way. Everything I did was geared to playing in a grand final. Would you do it in a grand final? What do you do in a grand final to win it? All that. And I must say, if you're 70 metres out, grand final day, you're 5 points down, right? You've got a mark half forward. The drop punt's not going to get there. You know, no. One bloke in a million will kick at 70 metres. So if you haven't learnt the torp, what do you do? Put the ball on ground, walk off and lose by 5 points. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
So why aren't they practising it? Please help me.
I didn't get the exact context of it, Malcolm. Were you being asked about David Myers and whether range he could have kicked the torp?
Yeah. Apparently he has something wrong with his hand. Now, I didn't know that. I'm unaware of that. And you just need to turn the ball a bit. The trick of kicking a torpedo is actually just to turn the ball a bit to get it spinning as it drops, as you guide it down to your foot. So maybe there's some problem here. I don't know.
Hey, the one I've been dying to ask you about all week, I would have thought if there was ever a man who either climbed a post or instructed someone to climb a post, it would be in your derivative way of thinking. Malcolm, what did you make of the climbing of the post?
Look, it drove me up the pole, Philly. I've just been around that long now, and you know there's some things you thought, I've seen all this before. Yeah. I've seen all this. I've never seen that.
Never seen it?
I have never seen it. Now, and one of the reasons why, don't forget, it's only been in the last 15, 20 years that they've put the padding on the pole. Mm. I've actually seen some silly people try and climb up it just mucking around, but they couldn't because it was too slippery or too splintery. So the AFL, you know, it's their fault. Everything's their fault, isn't it? By putting that padding on, they've allowed a rampy to jump up a pole.
Oh, I'm so disappointed that you were never up a pole, Malcolm. I thought, there's someone who did.
We did used to jump on them and swing around on them when you were a kid, you know, just to get the feel of the timber. But I found this probably, I did a straw poll yesterday of the girls, right? The ladies in the office. I call them girls. I don't know why I do. I always do. Anyhow, ladies, not one of them said that you're kidding. $10,000 for doing that calling the umpire a young
talking like a little voice, girl.
Like a girl. Yeah. Now I don't know if you're going to get onto that, and I've changed subject probably. But one of the things is we had a school teacher last night by the name of Michelle rang up and said that it's foolish that he has been fined for using a simile. Now, that is an educator, isn't it? We hear the word simile every now and again in our life these days. But it is, isn't it? It is only a simile that he used. Now, one of the things I've thought about is that if the umpire was offended, he could have given him 15 metres. It's in the rules. And if he is grossly offended, he could have reported him. The umpire did neither. Why is he fined $10,000?
It was said with a note of derision, though, wasn't it? It wasn't, I accept the simile, but it was said to belittle.
Okay, all right, then put this on the plate. How many other industries have a microphone, forget the media, because we were involved in all that and understand. How many other industries have a microphone to listen to or eavesdrop in their workplace? Can't think of too many.
Yep.
Can't think of too many. So I reckon the AFL Players Association need to wake up and get them to turn their mics off and that is private men's business or private business between the women, even when they play. I don't think it enhances the game at all.
Okay, so the broader issue for you, Malcolm, is you think it's an intrusion on the players, which is something that they have said before.
Yeah, it's their workplace. How many other workplaces have that? Now, the other thing is, this is where I find it hypocritical, and I'm not an AFL basher. I love the AFL. I love everything, 99% of what it does. But here they have a drugs policy when no one's allowed to know anything. And yet, out on the ground, we can have a microphone. You know, no names, no pack drill. One-strike policy, two-strike policy. So you can't know anything about that, yet in their workplace, you can know everything. And ironically, drugs are apparently unlawful. I mean, I find that really a juxtaposition.
Mm-hmm. The on-field, Malcolm, the Giants. So it was a sobering failure on the weekend after a body of fantastic work. They look like they're in it at the pointy end. The MCG, they have no good format. Now, whether the cause of that is you can dig into is... How do you read what happened to the Giants on Sunday and then particularly what it means to their ambitions?
Well, in a roundabout way, I tried to give some advice to Leon Cameron. Now, he'd say he doesn't have to listen, and that's right. But the Sydney Showgrounds is 9 metres less in width than the MCG. They've lost 14 out of 16 there. And players guarding grass on the MCG is much harder because of the width. They're 9 metres. You give a good player 9 metres... and they'll drill through that. And Alistair Clarkson's been doing it for ages. Get good kicks and drill through those zones. So 65 marks in that last quarter. I sat watching and I couldn't believe... I knew they were getting sliced through the zone. I just couldn't believe it when the stat came up and said 65 metres. You know what? I just said, in that environment, you're four or five goals down at three-quarter time. You're not going to get it by not having the ball. So, I mean, why wouldn't they just play man-on-man at the start of the quarter for 6 or 7 minutes? You know, some teams are never, ever tested out man-on-man. And people say that's not the modern game. Well, how come we have to win contests where players are around the ball and that's still man-on-man? Anyhow, that's another juxtaposition.
Yeah.
But you know what? You know, you know what Leon Cameron needs to do is actually try that. See if he's got a really good team. I think we all think they're a pretty good team and a lot of talent in there. You may start a new style of game by going back to playing one-on-one, and it might win, and you might be called a hero.
What about the MCG factor? So since it matters, they're 1-8 there. Two of those have been finals. They haven't been terrible in those games. What's the relevance of it, and do you need to overcome it at some point so that when you get to the finals, and a big final, we're talking preliminaries and grand finals at an MCG, that it's not a thing that sits over you?
Yeah, that's right. Well, if you keep giving the opposition the ball and they're sitting, you know, they're a good team and you're a good team, but if you continually play, I don't care what anyone says, that zone football at pointy end games, it is much more difficult to find it under pressure. So you've just got to find it. It's only a tweak. And I don't get why you would want to give an opponent somewhere near you 10 metres. Why not give him two? You might be able to stop it. I don't get that. And I think they've got to change.
Do you think they... Have you got them at the pointy end of the conversation, or are they going to have to need to change in your mind to get there?
I picked them the last 2 years to win the flag. I dropped off them.
Yep.
For various reasons. I think I had them fifth or sixth this year, just outside of it, you know, in prediction and all that's pretty hard. But I just don't, I don't know, just they seem to fail simply, in a simple way. Just get closer to an opposition player. Simple.
Simple to a master coach. There's been a bit of master coaching going on, hasn't there? Look in and see... So I thought Craig Bellamy had that week, Alistair Clarkson had that week. What makes a master coach? The knowing what strings to pull and when to pull them.
Yeah, look, I think there's two sides to that coin, as there is always. You need talent. You need ability and talent in your playing group. Full stop, end of story. You haven't got that, you haven't got a lot of strings to pull. Secondly, it's actually knowing that group. And then thirdly, it's executing. And one of the things I've always said about coaching, and that's why not having the runners would annoy me to... can't believe how annoying it would be, that I would have thought that the runner going out the coach wants them to get out and get back and get another run, one out and back. You know, to say they sit out, used to sit out in the ground is so wrong. It's just so wrong, and it's a folly that the AFL have got completely wrong. So you can actually try and help a player. And all a coach does in setting up a play, setting up a game, whatever you want to do on that day, and there's a thousand things you can do, is all you want to do is give the message to a player, this is what you do here, or this is what you can do, and then it's up to the player. Now, it won't always work, but all you are is the instigator of a thought for a player or a team. It is then, how much is that of the equation? 5-10%? Not much more, really. And then it's up to the 90 or 95% of the playing groups. But sometimes that 5% can be the difference between a Hawthorn beating a GWS or not.
Did you drop a big name player from time to time for shock therapy, to shake them all up for form? Were you one who believed in that?
Yeah, I did. And I've just been involved in a front page issue here in Adelaide with a guy called Tony Modger, whom I dropped after the final.
Right.
So, yeah, the answer to that's yes. And at some stage you do. Hopefully it's explained. Hopefully they understand. They'll always hate you for it, but that's footy. You know, as soon as you pick your first team, there's 20 other blokes that don't like you as a coach. So that's, you get over that quickly. So, yeah, no, it's a difficult decision, and particularly for champs, you know, guys that have been great players. But it's the old story. I'll guarantee you now, if you keep playing for as long as you can physically walk, at some stage or other, your career will be finished.
So the scarring for Modra is obviously still there. How does it affect you when it gets raised?
It doesn't, mainly because I went through the issue at the time and went through every step with him and explained why, obviously, with footage and all that sort of stuff. You do all that and you wind it up. And he was coming off a knee that year too, so, I mean, he was struggling a bit. But so... I've met him. I walked in a coffee shop the other day and he was there and I spoke to him and said hello. What he's saying was that I didn't really get to know Blighty as a person. I got to know him as a coach. Well, it's pretty hard sometimes to do that. I only spent 3 years there and he went and I went. So I only spent 2 years with him. So, you know, you get to know him a fair bit, but not as much as if you've stayed there 6 or 7.
Have you learned over the years that you can't have regrets about these things?
Yeah, no, because you actually weighed it up then. Now, whether the decision was right or wrong, you know, that's in the proof of the pudding, I guess. But the thing I didn't do, and this is what I said, and this is one of the things, there's some things you'd like to change, of course there are, is that probably I should have followed up a bit quicker. He'd already hopped on a plane and gone to Fremantle. You know, he was out of town. Now, would he have taken the call? He probably wouldn't have anyhow. But just to say, thanks for what you've done for the club. The irony of all that now is that he's back at the club, works for the club and is in the Hall of Fame. So, you know, he's back in Adelaide and embrace the club again. So that's good.
That is good. Malcolm, it's always good to chat on a Wednesday. We'll do it again next week.
Thanks, Jared. Bye.
Legend of the game, Malcolm Blight, with us on SEN.